السلام عليكم. Peace be upon you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a new episode of Islam in Focus. I am Muhammad Hosni, and I will be acting as your host on today's program. We have been promising you for several weeks now a series of episodes dealing with the fundamental teachings and tenets of Islam, and I am happy to announce to you today that today's program will be the first in that series. With us today is Dr. Gamal Badawi, professor at St. Mary's University, and he will help us to elucidate some of the basic concepts and maybe define some of the fundamental terminology that would be necessary prerequisite for any reasonable understanding of the wealth of ideas comprised in Islam. Dr. Gamal, welcome to our program. And I think the best point to start at is the extent of the Muslim presence in the world and whether every Muslim is an Arab and every Arab is a Muslim, as a lot of people may tend to believe.
See, the whole notion of a Muslim being an Arab in long flowing robes of a camel or horse is a kind of stereotype that seems to have been deliberately perpetrated by the media. Not only by the media, but even some of the more respectable writings seem somehow to imply this kind of a stereotype. Indeed, you would be surprised to know that Muslims, the Arab section of Muslims, in fact, constitute a small minority among Muslims. Mm-hmm. In other words, the Muslims who are Arabs at the same time constitute nearly 15%. That's almost one-seventh of the total world population, or Muslim population, I should say. In fact, the reverse also is true, that not every Arab is a Muslim. In other words, there are many Arabs also who are Christians or Jews and have been for years living in Arab countries. So this is, like I said, it's a kind of false stereotype that is normally associated with everything from Popeye the Sailor Man to cartoons and papers to writings. It's not a true picture. Indeed, the total Muslim world population gets quite close to 1 billion. There are various estimates. Some are somewhat underestimated. One recent issue of the Time magazine estimated the total Muslims all over the world as 750 million. Mm-hmm. There are other studies that show it's actually closer to 1 billion Muslims all over the world. But in any case, that would place it either as the largest faith, universal faith, on earth, or at least a close second, because according to the same Time issue, it estimates the total number of followers of Christianity with various sects, Protestantism, Catholicism, and Eastern Orthodox, and all others, combined at 985 million. So that, like I said, puts Islam either the largest faith, if you take 1 billion as the estimate, or a close second, really. So it's a universal religion, really, rather than something that's necessarily connected with the Arabs. You might, I might give you some examples of places where people only hear about when news breaks about. Most people would think of Muslims, if not only limited to the Arabs, as mainly concentrated in African or Asian countries. Of course, in combined Asia and Africa, they should be close to 700 million Muslims, and definitely this is the largest concentration. But on the other hand, there are also many places in the world where Muslims have even a majority outside of Asia and Africa.
Could you give some examples?
Yes, for example, in Europe, Turkey is close to 98 or 99% Muslim. Albania, which is now under communist occupation, estimated even according to the Time magazine, some people even would place the estimate at higher than that, but according to the Time estimate, there is about 70% of the total population in Albania are Muslims. There have been several reports also relatively recently showing that on Europe as a whole, on the continental level, Muslims constitute the second largest religion in Europe, or faith followed in Europe. Besides this, of course, And this might explain sometimes the discrepancy between the estimates. There are many places where Muslims constitute a substantial minority also. In Russia, for example, after the Russian invasion of Afghanistan, many questions have been raised about the effect of that Islamic revival on the Muslim population under Russian occupation, which are estimated now at about 50 million Muslims. That's almost 25% of the total Soviet Union. In China, there's at least 20 million, perhaps more than that. In India, even though Muslims are a minority, they're a substantial minority of 80 million. In addition, of course, to Muslim presence in considerable minorities in places like the Philippines, in North America, even to some extent, there's presence which is growing in many other places in the world. In fact, to reflect or show the universality of Islam as a universal faith, there's nearly 120 different countries in the world or more which has Muslims as either minority or majority. In 57, roughly, 57 countries, the Muslims constitute a substantial majority of the population. So the notion, like I said, basically...
Sure, a lot of people would find it very strange to believe that a place like Russia has 50 million Muslims, whereas Egypt, that's considered an Islamic country through and through, has less than that.
Right.
Okay, having established that not every Arab is a Muslim, not every Muslim is an Arab, maybe we should move to the following point, the following misconception, which is Islam being always talked about as a religion, like Christianity is a religion, Judaism is a religion, or any other of the religions of the world. And then the problem of sacred versus secular, which is almost becoming a proverbial dichotomy, and whether this dichotomy really exists in Islam at all.
You see, the whole notion of so-called sacred versus secular is something that stems largely in Western thinking. And for most people in the West, when you mention the word religion, it's automatically tied in their minds with the ritualistic or spiritual aspect of life, something just of acts of worship.
Mm-hmm.
And according to this, this seemed to be an implication that life is compartmentalized in two major components.
Right.
One component is sacred or religious, the other is secular.
Okay.
The religious part concerns itself mainly with the spiritual and moral aspects of life, the personal relationship between the person and the creator, while the secular aspect is everything else. That is, everything that does not fall within the boundaries of this very limited definition of what religion is would fall under the secular. And as such, religion does not really play a very significant role as a regulatory force in the social, economic, or political life of the individual. The Muslim find that kind of dichotomy unacceptable and quite inconsistent, in fact, with the nature of Islam as the Muslim understand it. At least there are three basic reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
On the etymological level, the word itself, religion, in the Western dictionary, if you get the equivalent of that in Arabic, it's the word millah, really, not deen as we use it in the
Arabic.
It's
not the word we use for Islam.
Exactly. We don't use it for that. It means simply, you know, something which is limited and ritualistic. But the actual word used for quote-unquote religion as, again, a broader term, is deen in Arabic, D-E-E-N, which means a way or a way of life. And that
doesn't really have an exact word in English, right?
No, I don't think that there's any single English word really that would convey the total meaning or
totality of it.
Right. And that's why I have some reservation about they use the term religion to refer to Islam, because the religion is connotated in the minds of most Western audience with this limited conception. But like I said, if I may put it in more than one word, as a way of life, a total guidance in life, then it follows from that there is no compartmentalization, that there is no separation between religious and secular, or sacred and secular. Because you could worship God in a way by following his commands and way of life in your socio-economic political life that people call secular. And you can also conduct the so-called secular activities according to the injunctions and broad guidance that is provided by revelation. This is one thing. The second major area, of course, that reflects on this dichotomy is that, historically speaking, the development of Muslim civilization has been quite different than what happened in the West. For example, in the case of Islam, the more people were sincere in the application of their faith in the various facets of their life, the more they had material progress and civilization.
Prosperity.
In prosperity. Yeah. The more they deviated from the pristine teachings of their faith, the more they became backward.
Yeah.
In other words, there was a complete harmonious correspondence between following the precepts of the faith as a total way of life and progress and civilization,
mm-hmm.
and the reverse is true. And this, of course, stands in contrast to what happened, for example, in Europe, where the trend actually was reversed.
It was exactly the opposite.
It was exactly the opposite. That's why it is very important for students of Islam, especially if they don't have, you know, the Islamic background or they don't really have the commitment, not to try to interpret Islam and put it in the Western frame of reference. They have to interpret Islam as it is.
So called separation of church and state.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is totally irrelevant, really, in in the mind of the Muslim altogether.
Mm-hmm. Good. So at this point, we have cleared up exactly where the Muslims are in the world, whether all Muslims are Arabs or not, and we have cleared the misconception, the common misconception, that Islam is just another religion, mm-hmm. and that secular and sacred should be dichotomized, should be separated in Islam like in any other faith or any other religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a lot of the literature about Islam, some of the most notable references in our university libraries about Islam call it Mohammedanism. As a matter of fact, the famous book of Sir Thomas Ben Gibb, which is one of the main references of Islam, is called Mohammedanism. Is this a proper name? And why do Muslims never use that name? It's only used in the West.
It is like one scholar puts it, he says, the misunderstanding of Islam starts with its very name.
That's right, yeah.
For the Muslim, no, it's not the same. Mohammedanism is not an alternative name for Islam. In fact, it is regarded as an offensive and improper title to give to the Muslims, no matter how spread. And that includes also the various derivatives of the word, like referring to Muslims as Mohammedans instead of Muslims.
Followers of Muhammad.
Followers of Muhammad. There are four basic reasons for that. First of all, that absolutely there is no basis whatsoever of that term Mohammedanism as derived, let's say, from the scriptures of Islam or the saying of the Prophet or the name even used by Muslims. They never refer to that. So the title is baseless.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from the title being baseless, there is a second reason also. The fact or the tendency to use Mohammedanism tends to replace it with the more authentic title. And by authentic, I mean a title which is given, the name of the religion or the faith is given actually in the scriptures of Islam. It's given in the Quran. It's used by the Prophet of Islam. And throughout the 1400 years of the history of Muslims, they have been using also the term Islam rather than Mohammedanism. So this is another reason. Why replace the authentic term with some alien term that comes from a different frame of mind? A third reason is that when you use the term Mohammedanism, given the fact that many other faiths in the world also derive their names from people who are regarded by some as their founders, it also gives a kind of false impression, either that Muhammad is worshipped by Muslims, if you compare it, for example, with the title Christianity,
yeah.
or the least is that Islam has its center really as a person, not as a principle, Muhammad, not to be derived from God himself, but rather founded by Muhammad.
Like Buddhism, for instance.
Right, Buddhism.
Yeah.
In fact, in some of the references, including the one that you referred to, there is this tendency to talk about Muhammad founded Islam in such and such a year.
Yeah.
Islam was founded in the 7th century by a man called Muhammad. This, to the Muslim, is a very inaccurate and offensive way, really, of putting Islam, because it depicts a great prophet as an imposter, because the prophet has indicated that what he's teaching is a revelation that he received from God. But to say he founded, we're just talking as if somebody sit down and concocts some existing revelation of scriptures and come and tell people that, you know, here I come, I am a prophet of God. Mm-hmm. So the question of, again, impression, the false impression of Muhammad being the founder. For the Muslim, the founder of Islam is God himself. It is the direct revelation, just as God has given his word and revelation to previous prophets before Muhammad. The fourth and final reason, that again when you use the term Mohammedanism, you tend to undermine the universality of Islam. I have referred briefly also to this universality when talking about the population of Muslims that extend all the way from Indonesia to Morocco, from Europe to South Africa. By using or relating Islam specifically to one person, as if only the followers of Muhammad or people who are, like I said, associated with the stereotype Arab are the Muslims, whereas to the Muslim, Islam is the same basic doctrine preached by all prophets throughout history, Muhammad being only the last prophet and messenger of God with the universal message to the entire humanity.
Now, could you define to us the word Islam itself? In other terms, from what you have been telling us, you have been talking about the universality of Islam and what Islam is not. Maybe now you should give us, and you said that Islam appeared in the Quran, in the holy book of the Muslims. Could you give us the etymological word of the meaning of the word?
Etymologically speaking, Islam is a term that connotates two things, or derives from two meanings. One is salam, which means peace. The other is submission. Submission in a sense of conscious, willing submission to the will of God. In fact, the two meanings are not different, really, because putting both roots together, or both meanings, I should say, together, it follows that Islam is the attainment of peace through
submission.
The willing and voluntary submission to the will of God. In that sense, then, when we talk about peace here, we're talking both about inner peace, internal peace within the individual, and peace from without. And it is important also to indicate here that when we talk about willing submission, that we're talking about a submission which is not just lip service, but rather a submission that manifests itself in the actual life and the deeds of the individual. Right. In other words, manifests itself in the love of God, in following the commandments and the injunctions that has been given by him. In that sense, you could say that Islam, among all other faiths that I'm familiar with, is the only one really that has a clearly attributive title. That is, a title that summarizes its nature.
Almost the whole faith in one word.
Exactly. You can summarize the whole faith in one word, rather than as common in the names of many faiths, which, by the way, are sometimes names given also by outsiders rather than original names, you know.
Yeah.
But many other faiths, especially world faiths, the major ones, the names could be derived either from the name of a person who was believed to be the preacher,
or of a place, or of
a particular locality or geographic limitation,
like,
whereas the nature of Islam is a lot more universal as the total and complete message to the entire mankind. For that reason, like I said, the word Islam perhaps is the proper term to use.
Uh-huh. And just as a parenthetically at this point, when we say submission, we don't really mean submission in the negative sense. It's sort of a positive submission, if the word can make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now having defined the word Islam, maybe the next logical step would be to define a Muslim. Who is a Muslim? And who can be considered a Muslim and who cannot be considered a Muslim?
Well, again, you can define it on different levels. In one sense, if you take the exact term Islam in a sense of submission, it follows also that there are many other creatures, animate and inanimate, who are regarded as Muslims in a sense of submitting themselves to the will of God.
Mm-hmm.
Even a person who is defying the law of God, who is defying the teachings of God, in a way, he submits to God in one level, at least insofar as the biological function or various aspects of his life or her life, which are beyond his or her control. In other words, etymologically, strictly speaking, you can say that the sun, the moon, the oceans, the vegetations are Muslims, that they submit to the laws which are devised by Allah, by God in nature. So in that sense, you could say the whole universe, willingly or unwillingly, submit to the laws of God. But on the second level, and this is perhaps the more important one, that like we were talking before, the submission has to be a willing submission, a commitment that the person makes, which means that there are also some aspects in our lives which we have some control on. We have some free will in choosing to do or not to do.
Mm-hmm.
The moral laws, for example, yeah. the obedience to the commands and guidance of the Creator. Now, if the person have the submission also, or the willing submission in this sphere of life where he has a choice, then there will be total harmony between compulsory submission and voluntary submission, and you get harmony in this universe. So in a sense, then you can say that any person throughout history who have, to the best of his ability and his search for truth, has submitted his will to the will of God, exactly, the voluntary and commitment and submission, he can be regarded as a Muslim. But of course, from the jurisprudence point of view, if you talk about today's definition of a Muslim within these two restrictions or limitations, we can say then that a Muslim who believes in all prophets and messengers that were sent by God throughout history, including the last of them, Prophet Muhammad, and the acceptance of the last revealed scriptures, that is the Quran, as the basic guiding aspects in the life of the person.
So just make sure that we understand each other on that score. Any Muslim who considers other prophets before Muhammad as bona fide prophets, if you will, and their followers as bona fide Muslims in the general sense of the word, would be doing the right thing. And I think every Muslim should be doing that.
Right. And indeed, I think many of the audience might not realize the fact that the way Islam regards Islam regards it as development or stages or links in the same faith. A Muslim does not resort to the use of the term, for example, religions with plural. In fact, the Quran indicates that the true faith throughout history, even before Muhammad was born, is Islam, that is submission to the will of God as we have defined it. There may have been some differences in the legislative aspects of the very specific detailed teachings of previous prophets in history. But the Quran indicates that the true faith from the very beginning, from Adam down to Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and finally Muhammad, is basically Islam. In fact, to quote from the Quran, there is one verse that says, the true faith in the sight of God, or the true way of life in the sight of God, is Islam. In another verse it says that whoever seeks any path other than Islam, in a sense of submission to the will of God, it will not be accepted from him, and he will be a loser in the Day of Judgment. In the Quran we read also instructing Prophet Muhammad to tell the people, it says, say, O Muhammad, to people, I am not an innovator of a new concocted doctrine among the messengers. So it was, like I said, links. The same basic truth that God has revealed to previous prophets has finally culminated in the most complete form in the message of Prophet Muhammad. So on the basis of that, it is no surprise that the Quran uses even the exact term Muslim to refer not only to the previous prophets, but to those who sincerely followed their path. Let me, if I may take a couple of minutes, give you some quotations, direct quotations from the Quran to make the point. For example, in chapter 10, verse 84, Prophet Noah is quoted as saying to his people, I have been commanded to be of those who are Muslims. Exact word Muslim is used, that is, of those who submit to God's will. About Prophet Abraham in chapter 2, verse 128, quoting both Abraham and Ishmael, and it says, Abraham and Ishmael said, O our Lord, make us Muslims, bowing to your will, and also of our progeny, people who are Muslims, to your will. In chapter 112, verse 101, Prophet Joseph is also quoted as saying, Creator of the heavens and the earth, you are my protector in this world and in the hereafter. Take my soul at death as Muslim, or one submitting to your will, and unite me with the righteous. About Prophet Moses, in chapter 10, verse 84, Moses is quoted as saying, O my people, if you do really believe in God, then in him put your trust if you are Muslims. Finally, in chapter 5, verse 114, we read, And behold, I, that's God, and I inspired the disciple of Jesus to have faith in me and my apostle, they said, we have faith, and do you bear witness that we bow to God as Muslims? Mm-hmm. In other words, the monumental evidence that you can find in the Quran makes it quite clear that the title Muslim is something that goes much before Prophet Muhammad, and Prophet Muhammad simply is completing, or through his message, mm-hmm. that total message of Islam or divine revelation that has been given to previous prophets has finally come to full.
I think that's the best proof that Islam is not a new idea that comes to the fore in a certain geographical location, in a certain historical period of time. It is just the culmination or the completion of a total picture that has been evolving over, it has been...
Right. Actually, this relates even to one of the very common misconceptions when some people start saying, oh, look, you know, some of the teachings of the Quran are similar to the Bible. Oh, Muhammad must have copied them from the Bible.
Right.
And they forget that the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament...
Yeah.
The Quran and any other scriptures revealed
are
coming from the same source.
Exactly.
So instead of admitting the concept of revelation, which is unaccepted at least among people who are religious,
they go to the copying. Now, besides the obvious historical relevance of this point, do you see that it has any kind of implications as an approach in the contemporary world?
I think it does. First of all, by developing this more universal approach, or universal brotherhood, if you will, we can demolish the walls of prejudice, fanaticism, and intolerance, and particularly stereotype as it relates to Islam that existed in the minds of many people, especially in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
When Islam is presented as something strange, a kind of what personality cult, weird kind of things, whereas mm-hmm. it is just at the heart of the total, the basic divine revelation in history.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, by believing that all prophets are Muslims, this established the fact that prophets throughout history, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, are brothers. They're not really competing with each other for the souls of people. They're all conveying the same essential message of God. It follows from that that those who claim to be sincere followers of those prophets must realize then that in order to follow them sincerely, they must also be brothers. They must break this wall. They might have some differences, like the Quran says, if God willed, he could have made people all follow one religion. But within this level of tolerance and brotherhood, universal brotherhood, people can talk and have dialogues about the particular differences that they might have in the interpretation of divine revelation. But it boils down again to the basic human brotherhood and the brotherhood of all prophets and their followers.
Dr. Badawi, thank you very much. I'm afraid we're running short of time. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us today. And we promise you to pursue this series of programs on the fundamental basic tenets of Islam, and hoping to see you with us next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.